Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for June 30th, 2009. I'm Annalisa VanHook. In this episode, we'll discuss recent research using mathematical modeling of signaling networks to predict viable targets for cancer therapies. I'll be speaking with Ulrich Nielsen, corresponding author of a research article published in the June 30th issue of Science Signaling and chief scientific officer of Merrimack Pharmaceuticals. Nielsen spoke to me on the phone from his office in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
So we're particularly excited about this study because it's our first example of going from really doing computational modeling of a network that we're interested in biology all the way to a therapy that we now put in the clinic, which is the vision that we set forth for Merrimack when we spun it out at MIT and Harvard about 8 or 9 years ago.
This paper that you've just published in Science Signaling describes your group's efforts to use a systems biology approach to identify potential targets for developing drugs or other therapies to treat human diseases. Can you tell us a little bit about the systems biology approach?
We started doing this quite a while ago, trying to understand how the different components within networks interact with each other as a system. And the reason we were doing that was we were sort of, in the past decade, sort of been the decade of genomics where we identified all the parts of these systems. And in particular in drug development, we started very much focusing on the individual targets, making inhibitors of, say, specific kinase without truly understanding the system that they're a part of. And I think what we've seen sort of arising from that is sort of continuation of this trial and error approach that we just didn't understand these individual targets well enough to just straight away go ahead and target them. So what we've been trying to do at Merrimack is to, through an integrative approach of experimentation and modeling, to try and understand how all these components work together in the network and use modeling and simulation as a way to identify the best way of perturbing a given network with, say, a drug. So we're really trying to use the systems biology approach to change this trial and error paradigm that has been the sort of mode in drug discovery for a really long time. The ability to simulate the activity of a drug before you make it would be incredibly powerful in terms of devising new therapies.
So you can use the systems biology approach to focus in on particular parts of a pathway that might be the best target for developing therapies.
Right. Not just identify the most important target, but also think very carefully about what's the best mechanism of a drug targeting that target. And today there are many different ways to target. Even if you already identified you want to hit a certain kinase, there's still many different ways of doing it. And we can use simulation to sort of sort through that systematically. To us, it's not much different than what has been done in the engineering field for decades, using modeling and simulation to figure out the best solution to a problem before you, say, build an airplane or whatever it is, that you would carefully simulate the different solutions to the problem. That's really what we've been trying to do here for some time now.
The first step of the systems biology approach is to build models. So how do you build these signaling pathway models?
The models that we're focused on here are typically mechanistic models that represent all the molecular interactions that are in the network that we're interested in. The way we do that is we very carefully read the literature looking for what protein interacts with which other proteins, if there's any kinetic data out there of what's the strength of that interaction, what's the rate constant, et cetera. And then the other component that we need to build these models is what are the concentrations of the different proteins that interact with each other in these pathways. What we often find is that a lot of the data on how these proteins interact in sort of a quantitative way is not out there, and we find ourselves generating a lot of data to support that. So it's very much an iterative approach between careful reading the literature to populate our models and then extensive experimentation to generate data sets that support these models. And what we're particularly looking for when we generate biological data for these models is first typically time courses of activation, and we show some of that in this paper, where you will stimulate a cancer cell line in culture for a period of time, and then at different time points, take samples, lyse the cells, and analyze the state of phosphorylation of different nodes in the pathway. We can then use that data to fit the models to, and through that, back out some of the kinetic rate constants that weren't known in the literature. The other parameter that we're looking to determine from our experiments is what are the protein concentrations in the cell of the different proteins in the network. And we can do that using quantitative biological methods such as ELISA, Western blots, et cetera, to identify those. At the end of the day, we get a model that we can then go through a number of validation steps to see that it's actually behaving the way that we see in real cells.
What signaling pathway did you model?
In this paper, we modeled a pathway known as the ERBB pathway. This is a pathway that encompasses EGF receptor, also known as ERBB1, ERBB2, ERBB3, and ERBB4, and it signals very strongly downstream through a number of different pathways, but in particular the MAP kinase pathway and the PI3 kinase AKT sort of pro-survival pathway. The focus of this paper was looking at the interactions of many different ligands. There are about 12 different ligands that bind this pathway, their combinatorial interaction with the receptors, and the downstream signaling, particularly through the PI3 kinase pathway that is so important in mediating survival in cancer cells.
So this pathway then is involved in tumors. Is it involved in any specific type of cancer, or is it involved in multiple types?
It's broadly involved in any tumor type that we've looked at, particularly in solid tumors. We find that this type of activation is very important that occurs through what we call in the paper combinatorial ligand-induced activation, where these receptors interact with one or multiple ligands to activate the pathway. And in this paper, we show that that's probably could be important in as many as 50% of all solid tumors in patients.
So you built a computational model of ERBB signaling using everything that you knew about the kinetics of the pathway. Then you used this computational model to make predictions about the pathway. What did that model teach you that you couldn't learn from experiments in cells?
Our focus was to understand what's the most potent mechanism for inhibiting this ligand-induced activation of the PI3 kinase AKT pathway. And that is something that's been studied for a really long time experimentally. And if you look in the literature, there are thousands of papers describing ERBB2 and EGF receptor. There are hundreds of papers describing ERBB3. But what we did not have a strong sense of what is the relative importance of these different components of this network, and the different receptors and some of the downstream mediators of the signaling. Can we use computational modeling to sort of rationally think about what is a key node within that pathway and how to best inhibit it? So this pathway was particularly interesting because there was a lot known about it. And initially, it was almost an academic interest that we started building a model of this, because there was all this knowledge, there were lots of drugs that were even in the clinic or even approved in the market inhibiting this pathway. It was an interesting place to start running simulations to see how all these things stacked up against each other. What we quickly started to understand was that once we had this type of view of the pathway from sort of systems biology point of view, the kind of view that an engineer would have if they were working on a system, we started to understand that the drugs that were already on the market or in development were not effectively inhibiting this type of ligand-induced signaling. And that actually motivated a whole drug development program at Merrimack.
So the model predicted good places to design drugs that were not the places in the pathway where current drugs were acting.
Exactly. There have been drugs target all the receptors in this pathway except ERBB3, which is the one that we found was the key node for these ligand-induced type activation of the pathway. And there are good reasons why people hadn't targeted it, I think. In one sense, ERBB3, which is known as receptor tyrosine kinase, but is not kinase active. So the kinase domain of this protein is not active. So that means that chemists have had a hard time going after it. There hasn't been a lot of interest from sort of chemistry side of things to make small molecules that inhibited it.
Since it doesn't have any catalytic activity.
There's no catalytic activity to inhibit.
So then were people going for trying to make inhibitors to the ligand binding domain?
Well, so the other reason that I think there's been a lack of interest in this protein is that it's not highly overexpressed in cancer. In fact, we find sometimes in cancer cells there's as little as 5 or 10,000 copies of the receptor. This contrasts to the more traditional therapeutic targets in this pathway, EGF receptor and ERBB2, for which there can be up to 1 or 2 million copies per cell. So it hasn't been, if you do sort of a genomic analysis of cancer, it hasn't stood out as being this highly amplified, overexpressed potential target, and as such also escaped some of the attention. But this turns out to be, when you start simulating different therapeutic approaches to this pathway, these particular features of ERBB3 not being overexpressed, not necessarily having catalytic activity, also makes it a very interesting target when you look at it computationally. So it turns out that because ERBB3 has many, many phosphorylation sites that get activated by the other kinases in this family, it becomes the best substrate for these kinases and the most strong signaling component for activating downstream PI3 kinase signaling, which is the signaling that leads to survival of the cancer cell in the tumor. it also means, because there's not a lot of it from a sort of an engineer's point of view, that it's actually easier to inhibit it than when there's a lot of the receptor. So just stoichiometrically, it's easier to inhibit it way down than it is to inhibit something that's highly overexpressed. So in some ways, these were the very reasons that I think people hadn't been working on this as a therapeutic target, but were the same reasons that we ended up developing an inhibitor to it.
So your model had predicted that ERBB3 might be a good target for inhibiting the growth of cancer cells. Did you then take the predictions from the model and take it into cells to test these predictions to see whether they held true in vivo as well?
Yes. So we were able to, and we described that in this paper, we were able to make a human antibody that antagonizes the interactions with the different ligands that can activate ERBB3 downstream. And using this human antibody, we were able to go into cell lines and predict the actual simulated activity, and we show that in this paper, that it very much matches up with the simulated inhibition of an inhibitor with the characteristics of our inhibitor and the actual data that we obtained in cell culture. And we were able to take that a step further into animal models, where we would grow tumor xenografts using human tumor cell lines that you'd implant under the skin of a mouse, and then dose this MM121, as we call this anti-ERBB3 monoclonal antibody, and show great efficacy in a range of different models. And what we show in this paper is in lung and ovarian cancer models that we can stop the growth of these tumors by administering MM121. And these are not tumors that are traditionally sensitive to the drugs that target the type of oncogene activation that you sometimes see in this pathway, either through the mutation of EGF receptor or through amplification of B2 or HER2. So it's quite exciting that we're really going after a different type of activation of this pathway, and that we could take it all the way from model through cell line to show it in vivo in xenograft.
So you've completed testing of this drug in mice, and it does appear to have activity against cancer cells. I guess then the next step is to test in humans?
We already are. So last spring we did safety studies in animals and shown this is actually quite a safe molecule to administer into animals. And last summer, we started a human clinical trial in cancer patients that is wrapping up the summer and fall. We're hoping to start additional phase 2 studies in various cancers this fall. So it's getting quite exciting.
Well, thank you for speaking with me, Dr. Nielsen.
Thank you very much.
That was Ulrich Nielsen talking about research from his group published in the June 30th issue of Science Signaling in a paper titled Therapeutically Targeting ERBB3, a Keynote in Ligand-Induced Activation of the ERBB Receptor PI3 Kinase Axis. As with many complex systems, the activity of a signaling pathway is rarely more than just the sum of its parts. Properties not apparent from studying the component reactions individually may emerge when the network is considered as a whole. Mathematical modeling is a way for scientists to integrate the vast amount of information that's known about the individual steps in a pathway to get a picture of how the network behaves as a whole. Another example of researchers using modeling to learn more about signaling pathway dynamics is an article by Masha and colleagues in the Science Signaling Archives. In this paper, the authors used a model of a yeast MAP kinase pathway to reveal properties of the pathway not readily apparent from the in vivo experiments alone. Also in our archives, a review by Hlavacek and colleagues discusses the methods and utility of mathematical modeling of complex biological systems. That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS. Advancing science, serving society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. On behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.